This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is, you know, specifically more findings from the Kazana Research Institute report. We spoke a little bit about this yesterday, Uma, the KRI report. This one, according to the research outfit's State of Households 2018 Different Realities report, men outnumber women in most occupations except those considered low level or, and I don't know how they're doing this, but in quotes, feminine, as described in the report. So the few professions dominated by women include health associate roles such as nursing and midwifery. That was almost accounting for about 80% of women. General and keyboard clerks, 79.5%. Cleaners and helpers, 77%. And teaching professionals, 68.6%. Uma, some of the areas in which men dominated as well were of a different scale as well.
Oh, yeah. Just senior level positions comprising almost 82% of chief executives, senior officials and legislators, as well as 80.5% of hospitality, retail and other service managers as well. Of the only two of the 29 occupation categories, sales and services jobs, had fairly equal share of men and women. I mean, is this surprising? I don't think so. I think it's been years and years of not just discrimination on that sense, but also, I guess, the perpetuation of certain cultural and social myths.
Yeah. And I guess this gender bias, of course, takes a look at not just the representation of these specific roles, but in specific industries as well. You're going to look at such gender bias when you're seeing market-oriented, skilled agricultural workers. You're taking a look at technicians and associate professionals. You're looking at farmers, fishers, hunters, gatherers, in very specific industries where it's dominated by a particular gender, specifically male.
Yeah, and of course, when you talk about industries and occupations that are dominated by gender, that's also going to give rise to a conversation about wage gaps. Mm-hmm. And that is also a big, big deal. Apparently, the gender wage gap did narrow from 8.3% in 2013 to 6.2% in 2017. However, there is still a large gap by sex.
Right. So when we take a look at, you know, the average monthly salary for Malaysian women was 2,772 ringgit. It was lower than the Malaysian men's average monthly salary, which was 2,954. But of course, you know, when we take a look at some of the disaggregated comparisons, actually revealed greater disparity.
Yeah. And you know what's one of the most frightening statistics, however, is of course, there is a chart that shows the reason why men and women stay out of work and and family responsibilities, for example, due to housework and family responsibilities. Essentially, that is a primary reason why women stay out of work. And if you look at the and look at that graph, right, you can barely see the section where that's the reason why men stay out of work. It is so tiny.
It's so tiny. And also, you know, we've been speaking a lot about this issue over the years, also on the opportunities that companies, be it in the private or public sector, that are making it available for folks who have committed to the family household, but given the opportunity to come back in. You know, a lot of companies have been sort of trying to do their bit, clearly not enough, you know, when it comes to that sort of disparity on that issue.
But also to take it back, even to a more meta level, I'm curious as to whether or not boys are raised to think that they can do anything they want, right? And of course, women sometimes are raised and encouraged to do very specific kinds of work.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is still the case in 2018. And we would love to hear from you if that still, you know, do you discourage your daughters from entering certain occupations because you think it'll be too hard for them?
We've got Banu on the line. Hi, Banu.
Hello. Hi there.
Hi. Tell us what you think.
Well, based on the report, it's very disappointing, but this is something that I think all of us expected, because I think Malaysia, in terms of, you know, we are in terms of gender equality, I think we are way behind as compared to other countries. Mm-hmm. I have a son and a daughter, and you were saying that, you know, would I, you know, ask my daughter to select a few feminine related occupation? No, I won't do that. And also, speaking on that, I actually encourage my son to sweep, mop, and he does a lot of things that that generally female used to do.
Oh, good.
Right, right.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, I don't differentiate. I mean, I believe that how we should be. And I'm working for a US-based company, and I mean, we are looking at diversity, I mean, so not just gender. I mean, I believe, you know, Malaysia has a long way to go. That's all I can say, yeah.
Banu, can I just ask, what do you think you'd like to see for, I guess, this... this disparity or this gap, this gender gap, to be closed down a little bit? What would you like to see in terms of initiative or policy? What do you think?
Because the thing is, I don't think just workforce only, you know, impacted. Because when I studied, you know, school, college and university, so the gender inequality starts from there. So the policy changes and all that, not just workforce, not only targeting on workforce only. We have to really look down to the bottom level, you know, starting from the education system and everything. So we shouldn't base on gender, but based on capabilities. Yeah, that's what I think.
Thank you very much, Banu, for your call. Much appreciated. We're going to head to the next phone call. We've got Lee on the line. Hi, Lee.
Hello.
Tell us what you think.
I believe you talked about two issues just now that are a bit different. One is the gender pay gap, and the other, I believe, was the women picking different fields to work at.
Correct.
I think social conditioning is an issue, and obviously the choices that women make are affected by nurture. The question I think is whether they're affected by nature. Are we assuming that there are no biological differences, or do we think that the manifestations of the choices that come from are purely, you know, due to social conditioning? So that's something I'm not sure about. Secondly, on the gender pay gap, how many percent? I mean, what's the percentage of the gender pay gap? Say you mentioned 6%, 7%, but what proportion of this is due to sexism and discrimination, and what part of it is due to women's choices?
What do you think it is? I'm just curious, Lee. What do you think it leads towards?
I think it's a good mix of both. I think it has to be a mix of both. So,
right.
But one thing that I think we should not do is to risk condemning women for their choices. I think that's something we ought to be really careful about doing. But with that in mind, obviously try to get rid of all the discrimination and sexism as much as possible.
Lee, are you? Do you think that there are opportunities to improve the conditions in which the environment actually allows women to excel in specific areas of the workforce?
Yeah, I think that's where women empowerment comes into play. That's where we should encourage women to, I think, you know, defy social norms. And not so much the other way around, you know, not so much telling society this is what you should,
right?
You know, but more focused on the individual rather than trying to make the world, you know, a bubble, I guess.
Well, Lee, thank you very much for your call. Very much appreciated. We're going to head to the phone lines again. Dr. Jashpal Korban has been waiting for us, former lecturer of law at Universiti Teknologi Mara. She's worked on issues relating to gender discrimination at the workplace. Dr. Jashpal, thank you very much for joining us on the program. Tell us, what do the figures show us about the trends in which Malaysian women participate in the workforce?
When you look at women's labor force demographics, the ages of these women who work and when they come into the labor force and when they leave, you notice something in Malaysia. When you look at our chart, it's a bell curve. We only have a single dip in our employment. That means women go up in their 20s and 30s entering the workforce. The numbers are increasing. They reach a high point and then they suddenly come down. Now, why the numbers come down is because they are leaving the workforce for childbearing and child rearing, all right? So that's why women leave the employment. But in comparison to many developed countries, you will see in their labor force charts that women will show a rise in employment post-pregnancy and maternity when they return to the workforce. And then finally, you will see the curve going up steadying and then coming down again when women leave the workforce for retirement. So developed countries will display a double dip, you know, or a double bell in their labor force statistics. And when we look at ours, there's only a single one. And that is a very powerful indicator that we are losing talented, experienced women in our workforce. And that's displayed in the Kazana report. Women are, there's a big disparity in the top management positions, isn't it? What happened to them? Where did they go?
So from what you've seen, are companies generally willing to introduce policy changes to combat gender disparity, for example, to support working mothers or to prevent discriminatory practices?
That's a difficult question. I find it difficult to answer this question generally. You know what I mean? We can only think about it in these terms. You know, the workplace today is changing. Yeah? We know with the use of technology, the way people work, or whether they want to work. Look at the millennials now. They are you know, bringing about different changes now to how they want to work. And all this thing about the employment scene evolving and changing. And if employers are not taking these matters into consideration, then they are going to end up creating gender disparities. And I'm going to give you an example. Is this when I looked at the issue of maternity protection, you know. We have legislation to say that women are entitled to so many numbers of paid maternity leave and all that. But one clear thing that comes up on maternity protection in Malaysia is this. It is employer-sponsored. Whereas if you look at the ILO's mandate, that there should be a sharing of that responsibility between the government, the employers, and the employees themselves. Okay, so when we put the burden on employers to provide maternity protection or leave, then it becomes a disincentive to employers to want to employ women because of the cost factor involved, okay? So I think, on one hand, we can blame employers, but on the other hand, we also want to say, is the government going to play a role in somehow coming with a better formula, perhaps, for these things? Or having a look at policy, you know, what has the government put into place? The employers in Malaysia only look to the government. If the government forces them in one way or the other, you can make positive changes to the workplace. But I think employers themselves are realizing that people are going to work for them if they're happy where they work. And so these employers have to buck up.
So when you want to introduce practices to combat gender disparity in employment, are our cultural norms getting in the way? Because, for example, many women have to shoulder a disproportionate amount of care work at home. And if a company provides paternity leave, but the culture is such that it frowns upon fathers who take such leave to look after their kids, it's just not going to work, right?
Yes. You are right. That's a cultural perspective is important. But look at this. Culture is not immutable. Culture changes, and priorities change. Women need to work. We need double salaries today to survive. Many young families, many young professionals. I think the culture has changed. You know, I think as the culture is evolving, men are getting more involved in childcare, child rearing, and we are going to see an increase in this. And perhaps one of the reasons, as I was saying, you know, why women have left is that was their inability to balance. But on the other hand, while they are living waged or formal employment, we are seeing a rise in self-employed women. Now, we call self-employment a form of informal employment in the sense that it's not formal like 9 to 5, 5 days a week kind of employment. Informal employment means you're self-employed. Look at the number of online businesses, for example, your Facebook Tudong queens, for example. Well, why are they on the rise? Because these are girls that realize that, look, you know, if I do a business from home, I'm better able to manage my family responsibilities. So, you know, it's quite interesting, this idea of cultural norms changing, because people realize that the economy matters, financial matter because they need to survive. So the culture is not immutable. I think definitely we are seeing some changes.
Well, thank you very much for your perspective, Dr. Jashpal. That was Dr. Jashpal Kaur Bhatt, a former lecturer of law and UITM, giving us some sort of perspective on the issue of gender discrimination at the workplace.
We have a message from KW who says, why is this gender thing an issue? Just let the market do its work. I think if you've been listening to our callers over the last 10 or so minutes, KW, I think we've painted a pretty important picture as to why this gender thing is an issue.
Mm. All right, folks, we're going to head towards the 7 o'clock news. Stay tuned to the evening edition. It's BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.